Hey, it's Ryan Reynolds, and I'm here with Keith, co-star of my upcoming film, If, only in theaters May 17th. Do you want to tell people the big news? All right, I'll do. Sign up now and you'll get unlimited for $15 a month and 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan on us.
MintMobile.com/switch.
Upfront payment of $45 equivalent to $15 per month. Unlimited over 40 gigabytes per month. Face lower speeds. Videos at 480p. Active Mint customers by 531.24 get 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan. Auto renews after 6 months. Offer ends May 31st, 2024. Separate Paramount Plus registration required. Terms and conditions apply if rated PG.
You're listening to Luke's English Podcast. For more information, visit teacherluke.wordpress.com.
Hello, ladies and gentlemen. You're listening to Luke's English Podcast, the best, not just the best podcast in the world, but the best thing in the world in general. And that's why you're listening to it, I suppose. You probably decided, hey, I'm going to... My life just is dark and depressing in a cold, barren place. That's why I'm going to turn on Luke's English Podcast and just make everything all right again. Well, well done, you made the right decision. In this episode, I'm joined by Ben Fisher, who amazingly is sitting in front of me after having travelled from London, but not by ordinary means. He didn't take the train or the bus or even fly through the air. No, he decided that he would power himself from London purely by the use of his own legs and a bicycle. So basically he's just cycled from London to Paris, which is a kind of, it's becoming kind of a classic challenge, the London to Paris cycle ride. And he's going to tell us all about it in this episode of the podcast. So hi, Ben.
Hello.
How are you?
I'm really good. I'm feeling good after my cycle. Fresh.
How are your legs?
They're fine. They're not tired. I do a lot of cycling, and they were up to the challenge, and I feel good now.
Really?
Yeah.
Can you tell us a few things about it? Like, what's the actual distance between the two cities?
I've come a bit of a circuitous route. The route I've done, I stole it from the internet, from someone called Donald.
Does Donald know that you stole his bike route?
I emailed Donald, and I donated a bit of money to his Just Giving page.
Very good. So you should always do that.
I did the right thing. So I printed his PDF guide, mm-hmm. and I did a really nice traffic-free rural route. It's a total... I've done a total of 460k over 5 days.
460k mm-hmm. over 5 days?
Yeah.
That is a long way. So just going back a bit further, why... Ben, why would you do that? Why would you... You know that there is a train, don't you? There's a Eurostar.
I've heard of the train. I didn't fancy that. It just seemed too quick, too modern. I wanted to go back a bit, back in time.
Yeah, like how they used to do it back in the olden days.
Yeah, when people used to cycle from London to Paris.
Or every day.
Yeah.
What are you doing this weekend? Oh, I'm just cycling to London from London to Paris. Again? All right, so you just decided to do it as a personal challenge?
Just a personal thing, yeah. I like cycling. I cycle a lot at home. I'd never toured before, but I've got lots of stuff because I used to walk and camp and hike a lot.
Yeah.
So I converted that to bicycle.
Okay.
And decided to do it. I've been planning for about 6 months.
Okay.
So I decided in January that I was going to do this.
Was that was there a lot of training involved?
I haven't trained, really. I'm a bit of an obsessive cyclist. Cycle to work all the time. Go out on my days off into the lovely Lincolnshire countryside.
Yeah, that's where you're from.
That is where I'm from.
Tell us where that is. Where's Lincolnshire?
Lincolnshire is up north.
Right.
On the east.
Yeah.
Next to South Yorkshire, below Humberside and above Norfolk.
Okay.
It's in a Norfolk, Humberside, South Yorkshire sandwich.
Norfolk, Humberside, South Yorkshire sandwich.
Mm.
How does that sandwich taste?
Rural and plum bready.
What do you mean by rural?
It's very, very, very much full of countryside.
By rural, we're talking about countryside, aren't we? As opposed to urban.
Absolutely.
It's a bit of English here, you see. Urban meaning of the city.
Yes.
And rural meaning...
Fields, cows, sheep.
Trees.
Trees.
Fresh air.
Yeah.
And little animals and stuff.
Yeah, it's heaven for animals.
Yeah. Okay, so you're kind of an outdoorsy type person.
Very much.
An obsessive cyclist, you say.
Yeah.
Does that mean that you'll just be doing something and then you'll just go, wait a minute, I've got to stop doing this. I must cycle somewhere.
I never get to the stage where I have to think I must cycle somewhere because I'm on the bike anyway.
Right.
So it's never a conscious decision.
So how much of your time do you spend on a bicycle?
Many hours. I keep spreadsheets.
You actually have spreadsheets?
In a very, very nerdy way.
Excel spreadsheets?
Excel spreadsheets. And since June last year, I've sat in the saddle for about 210 hours.
So you actually count the number of hours?
Seconds.
So you count the number of seconds. How do you do that?
With a little bike computer.
You've got a little computer on your bike?
Yeah.
Okay. Can you play games on it?
No, just count numbers.
Okay. It's like one of those little speedometers or something.
Yeah.
Okay, and it calculates exactly how much time you spend cycling.
It does.
So, sorry, in the last year,
yeah,
you've spent how much time?
It must be over 200 hours.
Okay.
Now.
Over 200 hours. So
sitting in my saddle.
And we have, let's say, 200 hours in a year. So how many hours is that in 12... how many hours per month on average?
I don't know. I could check the spreadsheet and come back to you on that.
Mathematics. I'm asking you to make sudden mathematical calculations.
No, not a mathematician.
Okay.
Couldn't do it.
I expect some of my listeners are already working that out. They're probably like, 200 divided by 12? Come on, Luke. That's easy. I still don't know what the answer is. We'd have to look at a calculator.
It's going to be about 18.
18 hours per month?
Yeah.
Okay. Divide that by 4? Then, all right, what's 10 divided by 4? It's 2.5, yeah. Isn't it? 8 divided by 4 is 2, so that's 4.5 hours a week.
Yeah, which doesn't seem that high, but that's mainly just commuting.
It's nearly... In during the week, Monday to Friday, it's nearly an hour a day.
Yes.
So, it's a good deal of time.
Yeah, and then I'll go out on some big rides on my days off.
Yeah, okay. Fine, so have you got a good bike?
I've got a lovely bike. I've got two.
Mm.
I splashed out a bit.
Yeah.
Kind of 18 months to a year ago, and bought myself two very nice bikes.
You splashed out?
Splashed out.
What do you mean?
Spent loads of money.
In one go?
Yeah.
What made you do that? Was it an impulse purchase, or did you plan to buy a new bike?
I got a racing bike around Christmas time because I wanted a nice road bike, so I did that.
Yeah.
And then I wanted to start touring. So the racing bike wasn't adequate for that. So I needed a touring bike.
What's the difference between a racing bike and a touring bike?
Racing bike's very lightweight, sporty, thin tyres, made to go fast,
yeah,
with no luggage. And my touring bike is heavier, steel frame,
yeah,
thicker tyres, carries loads of luggage.
Okay, all right. And tell me about the tyres.
The tyres?
Yeah. Have you got the very thick sort of tyres like on a mountain bike?
No, they'd be too inefficient. They'd be too much hard work.
Because
I'm mainly on the roads. If I had mountain bike tyres, there'd be more friction on the roads.
Okay. So steel frame, road tyres.
Mm-hmm.
And how much luggage did you carry?
27.6 kilograms.
27.6 kilograms. Okay.
I think, yeah.
You really measured it carefully, didn't you?
Yeah.
And how much do you weigh?
75.
Okay, so you're carrying just over 100 kilograms, and the bike. How much is that?
About 20. No, 18. 18.
Okay, it's quite a lot of.
Lots of weight to carry 460k.
460k. Mm. All right. My listeners, I expect some of my listeners that do quite large, long bike rides or runs and things themselves. If that's the case, do leave a comment to explain whether or not, for example, maybe you think 460k, come on, that's nothing. You know, I get listeners in South America, for example, they've got very long distances there. But I wonder if anyone has ever ridden more than 460k.
Yeah, because this seems like a really big deal to me. But this is probably tiny.
I think it's a very big deal for me. I mean, I can't imagine. I drove from London to Paris in a car, and it took me 5 hours, and that was like a massive sort of life-changing event, a huge journey. I can't imagine doing it by bike. So you did it just as a personal challenge to yourself. Did you do it with other people? Was there a big group? Was it an organised event?
It was just me. I planned to do the entire ride on my own from the Thames to the Seine. But I happened to meet a couple of nice people along the way.
Okay.
And they hitchhiked on my GPS.
They hitchhiked on your GPS?
Yeah.
What do you mean?
They came abroad with no map and no plan.
Yeah.
Just thought they'd cycle to Cannes. And they didn't know where they were going. I did.
Yeah.
So they stuck with me.
All right. So they were cycling as well?
They were doing the same thing, exactly the same ride, London to Paris.
Okay.
And we met at the ferry, got chatting, decided we could have a mutual arrangement and benefit from one another.
Okay.
And
So they benefited from your GPS. How did you benefit from them, Ben?
Not going mad.
Okay.
I'd have gone mad on my own, I think. I realised that. The longer I went on, and all the terrible weather, big hills, challenges.
We're going to hear all about this, these terrible weather experiences, the big hills, the pain, the sweat, the tears, the frustration, the blood.
Yeah.
Was there any blood?
Yes, yeah. There was leg blood.
Leg blood,
yeah.
Okay.
And hand blood.
And hand blood too. Did you fall off?
Never fell off. I kept smacking my legs on my pedals, though.
Okay, you can tell us more about that in a minute. So these people that you met up with, I believe you met up with two girls.
Yeah, two girls.
Was that promising? Because I would have thought, wow, this is great, two girls, brilliant. So maybe one of them will be interested in me. We will be sleeping in tents a lot. Maybe something's going to happen.
It was evident from... fairly soon after meeting the girls that they were of a different persuasion.
What do you mean by a different persuasion?
They were attracted to one another.
They were interested in each other.
Mm.
I see. Oh, right, okay. Were you disappointed or pleased with that?
I was fine with that, yeah. They weren't my type. And they were very very friendly, got on well with them, and I was very happy that they were happy with one another.
Okay, and you weren't their type as well, obviously.
No. That's very much so.
Okay, but so you soon settled down into a common understanding of exactly how the relationship was defined.
Yeah.
They were an item and you had GPS.
Yes.
Okay. Fine. So, good. So you had some companions with you on the trip. Excellent. Now, maybe you can start by telling us where you started from. What was the start point?
The start point was Provost Street in London.
Whereabouts in London exactly?
It is north of the river, fairly central. I can't really be any more specific.
North of the river, fairly central. Was it near a tube station?
I can't remember what the tube station is.
Provost Street, north of the river, fairly central. Okay, it's near... it's basically in Zone 1, central London, isn't it?
Yeah, okay. Central London.
All right. And then the end point, the end of the journey?
The middle of Paris, essentially. It was a hotel called Hotel Richard.
Okay, Hotel Richard in the centre of Paris.
Yeah.
All right. And how long did it take?
Well, I set off on Monday on my bike ride, and I arrived in Paris on Thursday evening.
Right, you set off on Monday morning?
6:10.
6:10 a.m.?
Yeah.
You started really early.
Mm. It was a big day. That was my biggest day, the first day.
Yeah.
So I needed an early start.
Mm-hmm.
And I had a long way to go. 137K.
137K?
On day one.
Okay. And how long did it take you to do 137K?
7 hours, 22 minutes.
Is that a good time? I don't know.
It's a good time with all that luggage, I think.
Yeah.
It was an average of about 20K an hour.
I see.
Which is pretty slow in bike terms, but on a tourer with loads of gear, it's all right. And the hills slow me down.
And so how was it when you... just talk me through the sort of first few hours when you had the whole journey ahead of you.
Really exciting. I'd been looking forward to it so much. And it was just great to be on the road with all my stuff. I was actually doing it finally. I've been dreaming of it for ages. And... getting to Tower Bridge, crossing the Thames from the north to the south, mm-hmm. knowing that I'd be crossing the Seine in 4 days' time was exciting.
So it wasn't really daunting. You weren't intimidated by all the distance you had to cover.
No, I don't think I knew how far it was in terms of kilometres to the, you know, to the nearest 1K because I'd planned it all. Yeah. But I didn't actually appreciate what that distance meant.
You didn't really appreciate how tough it was.
It was
going
a long, long way, and it was hilly.
Really?
Extremely hilly.
Okay. So from London to Calais, or London to...
No, that's a really boring way to go. London down to Calais, or down to Dover, is not a nice route to go.
Yeah.
And Calais is flat and windy and industrial and ugly.
Okay.
I'm Calais. Sorry if any Calais residents are listening.
No, I think in my experience, ugly. People in France are often rather disparaging about Calais.
Mm.
But it happens to be the closest spot. It's basically Dover to Calais. That's where England and France are closest.
Yeah.
So that's the place where often all the ferries and other transport crosses at that point. So you chose not to go to Dover and then to Calais. What route did you take?
I went from Newhaven on the south coast of England, mm-hmm. which is just east of Brighton.
Yeah.
And got a ferry from Newhaven to Dieppe on the north coast of France.
So the ferry, okay. Was it a nice crossing?
It was a lovely crossing, yeah.
Yeah, okay.
4 hours during the day.
Yeah.
And me and my new lesbian friends sat chatting.
Yeah. At what point did you learn that they were actually lesbian?
It was never explicitly discussed.
Really?
It was,
they never said to you, look, Ben.
They didn't need to set it straight, no.
They didn't have to say clearly, look, Ben, we've seen the way you're looking at us. We've identified the level of conversation that you're aiming at us, and we just thought it would be appropriate to say at the beginning that, sorry, we're not interested in you, and it's not personal, we're just not interested in men in general, we prefer the ladies.
It was never explicitly discussed.
Okay, but you just noticed, or you realised.
Yeah.
What happened? Did they kiss, or...
Their general behaviour.
Yeah.
Not as bad as that sounds, really, their general behaviour. That makes it sound like they were...
No, the odd sort of tender moment between them, or...
Yeah,
or
how couples act.
Yeah, okay. No need to dwell on that further, I think. That's good. But the main thing is you had some company to prevent you from going insane.
Some really good company. It was so fun.
Yeah.
Lovely people.
Excellent. Are you still in touch?
Yeah. We've swapped email addresses and numbers.
Okay.
And I'm going to send them some photos.
Okay, that's great. So, how long did it take you to get to, where was it that you, Newhaven? How long did it take you to get to Newhaven?
That was 7.5 hours of riding. I set off at 6:10 in the morning and got there at about 5. Yeah, 5 o'clock in the afternoon.
Oh, I see. And did you stop?
I had a nice long lunch, yeah.
What did you have?
I can't remember.
Really?
No.
You didn't have, like, fish and chips? It was in England.
It might have been a panini. Panini and chips. Yeah.
There were chips involved.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mentioned fish and chips just because of the cliche. But so we don't eat fish and chips that often, do we, really?
No.
How often
really.
Do you have fish and chips?
Once a year, roughly.
Yeah, Christmas?
they're not a seasonal thing for me. I fancy them once a year, eat them, and then realise they're disgusting and greasy.
Mm. And it's then, the sort of it's more of an idea than a genuine.
It seems nice before the event, but
yeah, okay, right. So the first day, then, yeah, you had your panini and chips as fuel.
Yeah, I just thought of fuel as food, as fuel, just the whole way.
Yeah,
it wasn't food anymore; it was petrol.
Yeah, kind of
bike petrol,
sort of man petrol.
Yeah,
okay. So then, by the way, when you left, I mean, did you pack a lot of stuff? I mean, for example, 5 days cycling, did you bring a mobile? Did you bring a mobile phone?
Yeah, I brought lots of stuff. I'm really into kit and gear and stuff. I'm a bit nerdy in that respect.
Gadgets,
yeah. So lots of stuff.
Tell us about the gadgets that you brought with it.
Most important gadget, I've got a Garmin GPS.
A what?
It's made by a company called Garmin, mm-hmm. and it is it's like a sat nav for bikes.
Okay.
And it's got maps on it, and it works out where I am,
yeah.
and how far I've got to go.
Does it talk to you in a?
It doesn't talk. No.
Okay.
So it doesn't tell me to go left at the next roundabout. It points.
Okay. It just has an arrow.
Yeah.
I see. And is it reliable?
It's amazing. It was absolutely indispensable, and meant the route was quite complicated, very rural, no signs pointing which way I needed to go.
Mm-hmm.
So it saved a lot of map reading time.
Okay, good. So you had your GPS. You also had your little bike computer.
Yeah, my little counting computer to tot up the K.
We've got some stats which you can tell us about.
Loads of stats, yeah.
Okay. Any other gadgets? Any other technology?
I had my mobile and a little charge pack, which will keep my phone, my iPhone, and you know how notoriously short-lived the batteries are.
They usually last for about 2 minutes.
Roughly 2 minutes. This little battery pack will keep my iPhone alive for 5 days or so.
Seriously?
Yeah.
Wow, that's amazing. Is it portable? How big is the battery?
It's small. It's about the size of... I can't think of anything to compare it to. Maybe half a postcard. Half of a normal postcard.
Half a postcard?
But not as thin.
I was going to say, that's half, very thin.
Half
battery.
Of a stack of 100 postcards.
So it's like about an inch thick.
Yeah, I reckon.
About maybe the size of a large hard drive.
Half a large hard drive.
Okay. I expect my listeners are thinking, okay, we don't know how big that is, Luke. Just never mind. Carry on. Let's go on with the story. Tell us about... I want to hear about how much it hurts and how... what I want to know, Ben, is how you got sort of partway through the journey and you realised, oh, my God, this is a horrible mistake and my legs are going to fall off. I'm going to die if I keep doing this. Did you have a moment of fear like that?
There was a collective, between the three of us, a collective moment in a bus stop in the middle of France during a torrential thunderstorm.
Really?
That we just thought, what are we doing? And we didn't know what to do. We didn't know whether to carry on, find a B&B, didn't know what to do.
Okay, all right. So that was in one of the extreme weather storms that you had.
We were lulled into a false sense of security. Day one was... my furthest day, but really easy.
Yeah.
Because it was day one. I was really pleased to be out there,
mm-hmm.
finally on the road. Day two, really nice and flat, easy. Day three, killer.
Really?
Yeah.
Day three was like the bad day, the day of days.
It was a terrible day, but we ended it on a high, and we're pleased we'd done it once we finished, but it was challenging.
Okay. So just going back to the story, we've done day one.
Yeah.
Good day. You covered 137 kilometres.
Yeah.
You got into France on that day.
And that was the following day. Okay. Stopped at a campsite in New Haven.
So you slept in New Haven overnight in a tent.
Yeah. I was camping along the way. We didn't say that.
Okay.
So I was carrying a tent and stove and all that stuff as
really?
Well.
Really? So you actually brought your home with you as it
Yeah. Was. I could have just lived forever on all that stuff.
Brilliant. And how big was the tent? Was it a one-man tent, two-man?
It's called a two-man tent.
Yeah.
But tent makers do this. They call it a two, but you can really only fit a person in it.
Yeah, why do they do that?
No idea. I think they like to sell tents to people who like to be cosy with one another.
Yes, that's right.
I was cosy with my panniers.
Okay. Those are the two girls you met.
Unfortunately, no, I didn't refer to them as my panniers. My luggage.
Oh, right. What's a pannier?
A pannier is a bag that you fit to your bike.
I see.
I had four. I had two on the back and two on the front.
Okay. And so how was it sleeping? I mean, the two-man tent, as you say, they advertise it as a two-man tent. Mm. In fact, it's enough for one man and a few
and
panniers.
Some stuff, yeah.
Yeah. And how was it in the tent? Were you cold at night?
No, it was fine. It was really warm. I was too warm at times.
Really?
And it's good. I'm used to camping. I camp a lot, so
right.
It was great. I've slept better than I've slept in months.
Yeah, you get lots of fresh air out there.
Fresh air, yeah.
How was the campsite? Where did you actually pitch the tent?
The first night was in this really grotty trailer park of a place at New Haven,
yeah.
right next to the sea.
Mm-hmm.
which was fine. It served a purpose. Okay. And then the next day was at a place called Neufchâtel-en-Bray, which was the stop after the first bit of French cycling.
Okay. So, beginning of day two, you took the ferry, and then bang, you're in France.
Yeah, that was a short day. We took the ferry, which was 4 hours. It got to France at 3 PM, and then we had 35K to do to our first campsite.
I see.
And it was flat, lovely and flat.
Really?
Yeah.
And the weather was good on that day.
Mm, perfect.
So it was really nice, beautiful sunshine.
Yeah.
You were thinking, this is wonderful, I should do this all the time.
Mm.
And then where did you sleep? Did you have lunch day? You must have had lunch day two.
We ate on the ferry, and then we got some dinner, from some supper from the supermarket at the first campsite.
Okay.
Near the first campsite.
Right, so you slept in another campsite in northern France.
Yeah, and that first section of the ride is along the Avenue Vert, which is a lovely tailor-made cycle route, which ultimately I think they planned to do the whole lot from London to Paris.
Really, they're going to...
Off, away from roads, dedicated cycle lane.
What's it called, this road?
It's the Avenue Vert, which the English translation would be the Greenway, is what they call it in English.
Mm-hmm. Avenue Vert. And it's a purpose-built cycle path.
Yeah.
Which takes you all the way from where?
At the moment, Dieppe, down to just after Neufchâtel-en-Bray.
Okay, and that's...
It's about 35K.
Sounds like a really fantastic ride.
Yeah, it's a motorway for bikes.
So there are no cars?
No cars, no roads.
No pedestrians?
No, some pedestrians.
Yeah.
But you just ring your bell.
Ding, ding, get out of the way.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And it's just lovely, smooth, flat tarmac.
Right, lovely. Cycling
nirvana.
And is it surrounded by nature, trees, and countryside?
Just through countryside.
Fantastic. Did you see any birds or animals on the way?
Yeah, the girls had a bit of a habit of whenever they saw a bird, no matter what that bird was, they would exclaim, "Bird of prey." They refer to every single bird as a bird of prey.
What is a bird of prey?
A bird of prey is a carnivorous, sharp-beaked bird that preys on other animals.
Like a hawk, an eagle,
yeah,
that kind of thing.
So they'd see a crow or a magpie or a sparrow,
yeah,
and label it as a bird of prey.
As a joke.
It was an in-joke.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, it's like whenever I would go on holiday with my parents, we'd be out in the countryside and my dad would always spot a bird, and if it was a bird of prey, like a hawk, he would go, "Bird of prey!" Because... they're the most exciting birds.
They are exciting. I think they were trying to make nature more exciting than it was actually being.
Right, so they were
playing a game.
Enjoying themselves.
Yeah.
Okay, so end of day two, you camped again. Same conditions? Was it warm and nice?
Lovely, yeah, perfect. And it wouldn't stay that way.
Okay, because then day three...
Day three started at 5:30 in the morning.
Uh-huh.
When a massive thunderstorm sat over us for 2 or 3 hours.
Okay. So you were hiding in your tent?
Yeah. We were restricted to our tents. Lightning, constant flashes of lightning.
Yeah.
Thunder, pouring rain.
And how did your tent deal with it?
It was fine. Mine was perfect. The girls, unfortunately, their tent went a little saggy.
Really?
Yeah.
What? It's the shape sort of went a bit saggy.
It did.
I see. And did that mean that they let water into the tent?
They got damp.
Oh dear. Mm. There's nothing worse than being damp.
Mm.
Well, there is actually worse than damp. There's soggy, and then there's soaking after that.
We would go through all those stages of wetness.
You did actually reach soaking wet.
We got there. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So after 2 hours in the morning of day three of this torrential downpour, thunderstorm, dramatic weather, did it stop?
Yeah, it stopped. It lasted a couple of hours. We got up, dried our stuff off, dried the tents, tried to.
Yeah.
Had a bit of breakfast and then set off at 11 that morning.
Yeah. The whole camping thing sounds quite intense.
Yeah, you have to be prepared. You have to be used to it.
That was a joke, Ben. You didn't notice, did you?
It was intense.
Mm. Yeah. It was a shit joke, wasn't it?
Mm, nice punning.
Yeah. Right, so after 2 hours, did the sun come out again?
And yeah, the sun was out. Well, actually, that morning it was a little cloudy, but it would get sunny that day.
But you... So, basically, on... After this terrible rainstorm of day three, the sun came out and you were like, everything's going to be fine.
Yeah, we were.
It's going to be great. Everything's going to be all right.
We thought it was going to be easy.
Yeah. They thought it would be easy.
Yeah.
Like some sort of horror film. And then when did it all go horribly wrong on day three?
It threatened to go horribly wrong. About 15k or so into the ride for that day, and we had a more torrential rain, but it was perfect timing. We arrived at a tunnel under a road,
yeah,
and we sheltered in this tunnel,
yeah,
with a torrent coming down the torrent of water coming down the road,
yeah,
but we were dry, and we just passed a couple of 60-year-old guys from England,
yeah,
on their bikes,
yeah,
a short time before, and they never arrived at the tunnel, and we were thinking, where on earth have they gone?
Yeah,
and they were sheltering just around the corner, trying to keep dry under a tree, and had no idea the tunnel was there.
Really?
So they appeared after the rain, soaked. So we felt smug.
Yes, I bet you did. Okay, but you got soaking wet, didn't you, on day three? Because the rain came back.
That was later on. So that storm stopped, and we crept out of the tunnel, got back on the avenue, and continued cycling. We had lunch at a place called Gournay-en-Bray, which is on the same river as Neufchâtel-en-Bray.
Yeah.
And it was 28 degrees, sunny, perfect. We had a long lunch.
Did you dry off?
Yeah, we were dry. Stopped at a cafe. And then we set off on the next stage, and it all went horribly wrong.
Okay, so this is the next stage of day three.
Yeah.
And you thought... Again, you had lulled yourselves into a false sense of security.
Yeah, 28 degrees. We were complaining about the heat. We were too warm.
You're like, it's too comfortable.
Yeah, too comfortable, too sunny, too perfect.
And then the rain was like, sorry, are you enjoying yourself too much?
Yeah. We had some big climbs to do, so we climbed up to a huge plateau.
Yeah.
It was a few hours of climbing.
Yeah.
And we got onto this plateau, and we could see directly ahead of us on our route... lightning, storm clouds,
really
bad weather, and we set off for that.
You're like, right, well, there it is. There's nothing we can do.
We have to go
forwards. Mm-hmm. So you just rode right into the heart of a storm.
We did.
It's not a very clever thing to do.
It was all we could do.
Yeah,
we had a campsite to aim for.
Yeah,
and we had a target and a time limit.
Yeah, you could have just stayed at home.
Could have done.
I'm just joking. Okay, so just before we talk about you riding into the heart of an extremely dangerous lightning storm, electrical storm, how does it feel to be riding up a big hill? Because that part of France you were riding through is quite hilly.
Extremely hilly, yeah. It was initially very up and down, and for every climb there'd be a nice rewarding descent.
For me, I don't ride that much, but I do enjoy cycling. And sometimes I take my bike out and I go, I'm going to go for a bike ride. And I cycle around, and it's all very nice. And then I get to a hill. And halfway up the hill, I think, why did I do this? This is a terrible mistake. I should have just stayed at home and, you know, done something else. And it's like the pain in your body when you have to ride up a very, very steep hill like that. It's incredibly tough.
I think it's a... if you get yourself in the right place mentally, and you embrace the burn in your thighs,
embrace
and think of
the
it,
burn.
Yeah, you really get into it, and you turn it into a good thing, and then you get rewarded with a lovely downhill.
Mm. Embrace the burn.
I was telling the girls to embrace the burn,
and did they embrace the burn?
They did. They loved it
every night.
Yeah.
And how does it feel to embrace the burn?
It's great. I cycle a lot in the Wolds, the Lincolnshire Wolds, which are very hilly, so I'm used to climbing hills. But with all that gear on my bike, it was obviously a lot tougher.
Yeah.
Lugging that tenth of a ton up a hill.
Tenth of a ton?
It is a tenth of a ton. It's over 100 kilos.
Isn't it? Tenth of a ton.
Yeah, if you put it that way, it sounds more impressive.
Yeah, it's true. Okay, so by sort of the middle of day three, weren't you... quite exhausted after having cycled how far?
Probably that would have been
300 or something.
Well, we've done 140 on the first day, followed by 35. That takes us up towards 200, and then we've done 50 that morning. So 250 we were on.
Okay, and so how were you feeling at 250?
We were feeling good. We had the weather was nice.
Yeah.
Despite the approaching storm.
Yeah.
We'd had a big lunch at that town we'd stopped at, so we were okay. We were tired from the climbs, but.
Okay. But then you got to the top of this hill and there was the storm waiting for you. Had you, by the way, had you informed lots of people that you were doing this trip before you did it?
I had. The girls, I don't think, knew what was going on and where they were going, and they didn't let anyone know.
They hadn't told anyone they were doing it?
No. They set off a day late because they hadn't bought any panniers or kit. Went to a camping shop and then caught a ferry.
Do you think they'd ever seen that film 147 Hours?
I don't think they have, otherwise they'd know how silly that was.
Yeah, obviously in 147 Hours, a guy goes off on a bike ride and then decides to sort of do some hiking through the sort of wilderness in North America, and he meets two girls and it's all going well, and then he falls down a hole and traps his hand. He has to chop his arm off.
Yeah, there was no severing of limbs on our trip.
Thank goodness for
fortunately.
That.
Fortunately.
Yeah. Okay, so you're at the top of a hill. There's a huge electrical storm in front of you.
And we're going into that.
You think, right, let's just ride straight into the heart of darkness, as it were. And so take us through what happened.
Well, we set off. It started to rain. It got heavier and heavier and heavier. I had a waterproof coat. My two companions didn't. They didn't have a map, they didn't have a waterproof. So we stopped at a little village and sheltered in a bus stop with a local youth.
A local youth?
Yeah, who initially was very reserved and didn't look at us.
Yeah.
But then after a while began chatting.
In French?
A mixture of French and English. My French is almost non-existent, but the two girls I was with speak almost fluent French.
Yeah.
So they were using my GPS, I used them as translators.
Okay.
Yeah, so we sheltered in this bus stop with a youth in probably the hardest rain I've ever seen. And really? The ground looked like a sea.
Yeah.
Just loads of water.
So it was like a flood, flash flood?
It was a flash flood, yeah.
Okay, so you couldn't have cycled through it?
No, it would have been stupid, dangerous, and we'd probably got struck by lightning.
Yeah.
Because we were on metal bikes.
That's right, and that wouldn't... Would that not have given you a bit of extra power to just get through that part of the trip?
It may have propelled us a few metres, but I think the downside would have been death.
Yeah. You would have been thrown forwards, but you would have then...
We'd have made progress, but we'd have given our lives.
It's not worth that much.
No.
3 metres.
Hmm.
Yeah, okay. So you hit the bus stop during a flash flood, and did you consider sort of...
We were just wondering what to do, because it was that hard, and the boy in the bus stop was telling us that the weather forecast said this was going to go on until 2 a.m.
Yeah.
And this was... We were at about 7 in the evening at that point.
Mm-hmm.
So we were trying to decide what to do, whether we could look for a little B&B or push on for the campsite, which was going to be a further 70k. We'd already done 50.
70 is a long way.
Yeah, but we just, in the end, just decided it was all we could do, and we set off. Once the rain has eased slightly, we set off.
Okay.
And got soaked.
What's it like riding in heavy rain?
It messes with your mind.
Yeah.
You just enter a zone in your mind where you just think, I've got to do this, and it's head down, pedalling.
Obviously, it's not very pleasant having the rain splashing in your face.
No.
And that kind of thing. Do you have mud guards on your bike?
Yeah, yeah.
Okay.
They help.
But I imagine there's still quite a lot of water splashing up from the road.
Absolutely.
And you're just soaking wet, your socks, your underpants, everything.
Everything.
Yeah, okay. Not nice.
So we pushed on, and we finally arrived at a town called Marine.
Yeah.
Which is just south of where we were. And we found a takeaway pizza place and had massive pizzas because we were exhausted. And tried to dry off, which didn't work.
Really?
And then we had a further 20 kilometres to go to the next campsite. And I had told the girls that it was 12. And I lied to them.
Wait a minute. You had a further...
We had a further 20.
And you told them it was 12?
Yeah, because I misread the GPS.
Right.
I was reading it as, you know, as the crow flies, which means from point to point in a straight line.
Yes.
I was measuring that distance, and it was actually 20 along the roads.
Right.
But I didn't let them know. until the morning when I confessed.
Because you thought, if I tell them the truth,
I thought it would destroy their minds and they'd just either kill me,
yeah,
or
kill each other.
Kill each other, yeah,
yeah. So you lied to them,
yeah,
in an attempt to keep their sanity together.
I told them the following morning that I'd been trying to protect them,
yeah,
and they agreed.
They agreed that
they would have killed me.
Yeah, so you did the right thing.
Yeah, I did.
So lying sometimes is the only thing you can do.
Yeah.
So lying is a good thing.
I lied for the greater good.
Yeah, for the greater good.
Hmm.
Okay. So end of day three. Did you sleep in wet conditions? Were you sleeping in wet clothing, in a wet sleeping bag?
I was prepared. My panniers are waterproof, and I kept kit dry where I could.
Hmm.
So I wasn't. The other two, unprepared.
Oh dear.
Wet.
What a disaster.
Yeah, they were very, very damp that night. So but in fact, we'd gone past damp. They were at they'd gone through soggy, and they were at soaked.
So they were sleeping in soaking wet conditions.
Essentially, yeah.
Oh dear.
Yeah, and it was a weird campsite as well. Huge, huge campsite, and we were the only people on it.
Really?
And we arrived at 11 in the evening, having set off at 11 that morning.
So you had to pitch your tent in the dark?
Yeah.
That must be difficult.
Yeah.
Yeah, but have you learnt to pitch your tent with your eyes closed?
I'm quite good at mine now, yeah.
Okay. But the girls, how did they get on?
They were okay as well. They'd never put the tent up prior to the trip. But and they'd borrowed it off someone.
Uh-huh.
But they managed.
So they didn't know if all the parts were in there.
They hadn't got a clue.
But they hadn't even opened it before they set off.
They hadn't, no.
Oh, my God. How old were they, by the way?
They were 23 and 24.
All right, so fairly young. It's the sort of thing you can do when you're that age.
Mm.
When you get a bit older, the thought of a night sleeping in a wet tent that you can't actually put up is not really a possibility.
No.
Okay, so day four.
Day four was the final day of the ride. So we went from that campsite, and the end of that day would see us arrive in Paris, finally.
Yeah.
And that was going to be a slightly shorter day. So day three, we'd done, in the end, 120K. And the following day was going to be about 80.
Okay. All right. How did it go then, day
that,
four?
It was very stop-starty. It wasn't very smooth. There were a lot of points where we had to stop. And we had to take a slightly different route as well, because the cycling to the campsite the previous night had taken us off course, off Donald's route.
Don't leave Donald's route.
We had to.
Okay.
Yeah, so we left Donald's route the previous night, and we had to get back on it the following day. We got back on it, and we then entered Paris on these lovely hilly forest trails through forests and woodland. Right into Paris, essentially.
Great. And then, so what was the first thing you saw of Paris?
First thing we saw, through a gap in the trees, we arrived at this lovely kind of monument with a lake, and through the trees we saw Tour Montparnasse.
Which is a big building, which is like a famous building here.
Yeah, it's probably one of the ugliest buildings in Paris, but it's one of the most instantly recognisable.
Very tall, basically black tower. Okay, so how did it feel then to see Paris?
That was incredible. Because having set off from London, north of the river, to then see our first sight of Paris was amazing.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay. I've been waiting for that moment.
And what was the sensation? Did you feel something move inside your trousers? Or
Just elation, yeah. To have done that, and to know we only had about... We were still about 20, 25 kilometres from Paris.
Okay.
But that was great. We took photos and had a rest.
Okay. And then, so how was it riding through the suburbs into Paris? Because it's quite complicated. Cycling in Paris is quite dangerous.
I've really enjoyed it.
Yeah.
I haven't felt vulnerable.
How was it, by the way, cycling on the other side of the road? Because obviously in England we drive on the left, in France they drive on the right.
Yeah. Well, the first bit along the Avenue Vert, off-road, so we didn't have to think about it. But yeah, it just happens.
Mm.
I've driven in France before.
Yeah. How do you find it driving on the right?
Fine. Yeah, it's just mirrors become an issue because you're on the wrong side of the car.
Yes.
So overtaking stuff
yeah.
is different because you're not in the right seat.
if you're in a right-hand drive car, which is like an English car, but you're driving on the right, that's really hard because you can't see around the other cars.
You can't.
So it's a bit...
Having a passenger is helpful.
Yes, you need a passenger, a reliable passenger who...
Who's not going to lie to you like I lied to the girls.
Yeah. Yeah, well, hopefully in an overtaking situation, that's when you should tell the truth.
Yeah.
It's like, yeah, no, it's fine. You know, I better not tell him about the truck.
Trying to protect them.
He'll stress out. No, it's fine, you can overtake now. Oh, don't, you know, I won't mention the truck, he'll worry. And anyway, we really need to overtake this bus. No, that's not what you should do in that situation. Okay, so you cycled through the suburb and you cycled right into the heart of Paris.
Yeah, we did. Most of it was woodland and forest and stuff, and then just the very last bit was the suburbs.
Mm-hmm.
And we stopped at a campsite on the west of Paris, I think the only campsite in Paris.
Really?
Right next to the Hippodrome, right on the banks of the Seine.
Okay.
So we stopped there, put the tents up, had a beer. We rewarded ourselves with a beer.
Is that the first beer that you'd had?
Yeah, we'd had some tins at Neufchâtel. A couple of tins each a few days ago, but this was our celebratory we're in Paris beer.
Glass of beer. Was it served to you by an unfriendly, moody waiter?
He was all right. He was initially guarded, but when he realised the two girls were willing to converse in French, he let his guard down.
It helps a lot to speak a few words in French.
Yeah.
It breaks the ice.
It does. So, yeah, we stopped, put the tents up, had a beer... and then just chilled out for the evening.
How did that beer taste?
It was great. Best beer I've ever had.
Really?
Yeah, because I'd done more than 300 kilometres.
Yeah.
And it was great.
Okay. And so then what? What happened?
Then we just spent the evening at the campsite, and then we decided at about 11:30 that evening, we hadn't eaten, and we decided we would cycle into central Paris. which was going to be a 20-kilometre round trip. 10 kilometres there, 10 back, but that seemed like nothing, given the distances we've been doing.
10 kilometres there and back is quite far, especially when it's getting dark.
Yeah, so we had a midnight cycle into Paris, arrived at the Arc de Triomphe at midnight, and then cycled down the Champs-Élysées and into Paris.
Wow,
an
experience.
It was incredible. And we went to a crêperie.
Yeah.
Had crepes, another beer.
Yeah, naturally.
And then cycled back in more torrential rain.
Really?
Yeah, and we'd all changed into our dry clothes, dry shoes.
Yeah.
Showered, got ourselves sorted, and then we cycled back to the campsite in torrential rain, at which point my saddle just decided, sorry, I've had enough. You've subjected me to hours and hours and hours of being sat on in the rain, and it just jumped off.
Your saddle was like, see ya, au revoir.
It just jumped ship, or jumped bike.
So what? How did the saddle come off? I mean,
it just worked itself loose. It was really keen to get off and just came loose, and I suddenly found myself initially sitting on a saddle at about a 45-degree angle.
That's not comfortable.
Both backwards and forwards, it kept moving positions.
Right.
So one moment I'd sit down and I'd be leaning forward at 45 degrees and then backwards, and then it just gave up.
And just left the bike completely?
Yeah.
And so you realise that you'd lost it?
I realised immediately, and I had to stop, and we still had about 7K to cycle back, and I just did it standing up.
Yeah.
Because I had to.
You had to carry the saddle.
I put it back on and tightened the bolt as much as I could with my fingers. Another thing was, none of us had done, you know, embarked on that 20K section into Paris and back with a puncture repair kit. None of us thought.
Okay.
So it could have gone horribly wrong.
I'm just going to have to ask you to define some terms or help us with some vocab of bicycles.
Yeah.
You said the saddle came off. What's the saddle?
The saddle is your seat that you sit on top of the bike. And that's where you sit and pedal.
Okay. Pedal, what's that?
A pedal is what you transfer your power from your legs into the chain and the gear system so that you can turn the wheels. So the pedals turn round and round. You've got one on each side with a foot on each pedal.
Yeah.
And you're turning them in circles.
So the pedals are where you put your feet. A pedal is a noun, but it's also a verb. You pedal.
Yeah,
to,
you pedal
to move the bike forwards.
Yeah, on the pedals.
Okay, all right. And then you got the chain.
Yeah.
Did your chain come off?
No, not at all. No, my bike's in very good condition because I keep it well maintained.
Yes.
And the chain didn't come off.
Okay, so the chain, and you got your wheels, of course, tyres.
Tyres.
And sometimes if you cycle over like a thorn or a piece of glass or something, you might get a puncture.
Yes.
What's a puncture then?
A puncture is when something sharp goes through the rubber of your tyre.
Yeah.
And makes a hole in the inner tube.
What's the inner tube?
And the inner tube sits between the wheel and the tyre, and that's what you fill with air to give yourself a comfortable ride.
So if you get a puncture, you need to take the tyre off, you need to take out the inner tube and repair it by using a puncture repair kit.
Yes.
Which has little bits of rubber and you glue
rubber and glue and chalk and all sorts of things, yeah.
What's the process for repairing a puncture on a bike?
You've got to stop and take all your luggage off the bike, turn the bike upside down, take the wheel off, and then you use tyre levers to take the tyre off. And those are little bits of plastic which look a bit like a fork, which you use to take the tyre off the wheel.
Yeah.
Then you take the inner tube out, you find the hole.
How?
You pump it back up again and you listen for air coming out.
What if it's noisy, if you're near a street or something?
With difficulty.
Okay.
You wait for the cars to stop.
And you just have to listen for the tsss.
Yeah. Sound. Or you can run your hand over the tyre and feel the air coming out.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. And then you locate the hole?
Yeah. You then rub the inner tube over the hole with a bit of sandpaper, which is coarse. Gritty paper to make the surface a bit rough, and then you put some glue over the hole, and then you stick a new bit of rubber over the glue.
And how long does it take to repair?
I can do one in about 10 minutes. And I meant to say, actually, on the terrible day with all the torrential rain,
day three,
the middle of a big climb was when I decided to get my first puncture.
I mean, you didn't decide to get a puncture. It just happened, right?
Yeah. My bike decided that it was going to run over something sharp.
And what did you run over?
It must have been a sharp stone.
Really?
Because there was nothing in the tyre.
Okay.
So, yeah, I carried out that procedure with my puncture repair kit on that day.
Okay.
Yeah.
Successfully.
Yeah. And the girls complimented me on how quickly I did it.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, well done.
Felt very manly.
Yeah, you did. Yeah, it's good, isn't it, to feel like that sometimes, I suppose. Mm. So now here you are in Paris, and are you going to ride back?
No, I haven't got time. I would love to be riding back. I would definitely do that again.
Yeah.
But I've got to get back to work.
Oh, yeah.
I'm at work on Wednesday.
Okay. You're taking the Eurostar.
Yeah, my sister met me in Paris.
Yeah.
She caught the Eurostar here on Friday evening.
Yeah.
And then we're catching a late train back tonight.
Okay. All right.
Back to London. Then I stay one night in London, and then it's back home to rural Lincolnshire.
Yes, okay. Let's see. So I believe that you're blogging about this experience.
Yeah, I am. I've using my iPhone and my battery pack, I've been writing a daily blog just with a bit of an account of where I've been.
Mm-hmm.
How many miles I've been doing, how many kilometres I've been doing.
Yeah.
All the numbers off my computer.
Yeah.
Hours in the saddle.
Okay. Maybe we can just go through some of those statistics in a moment.
Yeah.
But tell us, what's the address for your blog so that my listeners can check it out?
My blog is Drain Bams.
Right, how do you spell that?
Which is
D-R-A-I-N. A-I-N.
N.
N, okay.
Bams, which is B-A-M-M-S.
B-A-M-M-S.
.wordpress.com.
Okay. And what's Drain Bams? Why did you come up with that name?
I used to live in a little town called Louth with my parents and my sisters. There's a plumber in Louth called Brian Dams.
Yeah.
Who writes appalling poetry. Sorry if you're listening, Brian, but it's not good. And he sends it into the local paper, the Louth Leader, and it gets published every time without fail.
Yes.
I decided I was going to create an alter ego.
Yeah.
Drain Bams, which is a play on Brian Dams.
Yeah.
And I would send poems in his style into the paper. I'd send entire anthologies of poetry.
Yeah.
They never published it. But lots of my friends know me as Drain Bams.
Okay.
And their families think my real name is Drain.
Really?
Yeah.
Mr. Drain Bams.
Yeah.
Drainbams.wordpress.com.
Yeah.
So let's have some stats. I think you've got your notebook.
Yeah, I've got a notebook, which I've been writing in every day.
Okay.
Off the trip.
Can you perhaps give us some stats for the trip as a whole?
Yeah, I can. That's probably easier to do. I'll do it on the here. So I've done a total of 460.3 kilometres.
Yeah,
which is a little bit more now because I've just cycled here from another part of Paris. So we're on about 467 now.
467K.
Yeah.
All right.
I'd have to add up all the hours. It's many hours in the bike. There were about 7.5 on the first day, 5 the next day, and then a couple more, 5 and 4 or something. So. Mm-hmm.
Okay. It's quite a good time. Mm. Speed?
Speed. I've been averaging, I would say, 20, 21 kilometres an hour.
20
for the whole trip, yeah.
Okay, all right. Well, do you know what your maximum speed was?
I do. I've got that written down. It might take me a little time to find it, so we could talk about something else.
How fast you went.
There we go, yeah, that will be it. That was on, I can't remember what day that was, but it was 53.8 kilometres an hour.
53.8 kilometres an hour.
Which isn't that fast, really, if you're used to driving.
Yeah.
But on a bike down a hill with 30 kilos of gear.
Yeah.
When something might run out in front of you.
Your saddle might just jump off at any moment.
Is fast.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That is pretty exciting.
Yeah, the fastest I've been is 66 on my bike.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Brilliant. Okay. I was going to ask you the minimum speed.
Stopping.
Yeah, it's just whatever's just above stopping.
Yeah.
Okay. Right. Great. So do you recommend doing this then?
Absolutely, yeah. It's been such a great adventure. I'd love to do the same thing again with somebody else so I can show them how great it is. Because you can describe it all you like, but to actually be out there in the middle of the countryside under your own power is great. But I would say if anyone wants to do it, make sure you're fit. Because
yeah.
I've averaged over 100 a day, and you have to be fit.
Do you have any other advice?
Prepare, or find someone you can rely on, like the girls did.
Like basically,
they didn't prepare, but they found someone who had.
Okay, so either prepare or cycle with Ben.
Yeah.
Okay. Right. Very good. Do you have any sort of recommendations for movies or other stuff that people can get into? Is there like a cycling movie that you would recommend?
I don't think anyone's done that. That's a great idea. Like an epic journey. One thing I would recommend is there's this guy called Mark Beaumont. Mark Beaumont is a Scot who set the world record for the fastest circumnavigation of the world by bicycle. He cycled 18,000 miles. Around the world in world record time. It has since been broken. It's been smashed, actually, since.
Yeah.
But he did 100 miles a day on average.
Yeah.
And he... There was a documentary and a book that went with that ride called The Man Who Cycled the World or
the
something.
The Man Who Cycled the World.
Yeah. That's worth watching. It's on YouTube, I think.
Yeah.
And the book's very good as well. And then he cycled the length of the Americas as well.
Right.
And The Man Who Cycled the Americas was the documentary and book that came with that.
Okay.
So, yeah, they're well worth checking out. In fact, that's what inspired me to do this ride, really.
Mm.
I was so into reading that book that I wanted to do my own trip.
Okay. And obviously cycling is a massive sport. It's, you know, the Tour de France and all that kind of thing. But recently it's been sort of rocked by... There's been lots of controversy in professional cycling, especially after Lance Armstrong admitted that he took lots and lots of performance-enhancing drugs.
Yeah.
So the doping scandal.
Yeah.
What do you think about that? Did you look up to Lance Armstrong before? Did you think he was a great?
I've never been a follower of sport cycling.
Yeah.
I've never really followed the tour. I couldn't name many riders other than Lance Armstrong, to be honest.
Really?
It's more about my own cycling and touring.
All right. What do you think of Lance Armstrong, though, now that he admitted to doping?
I think it's a pretty bad thing for sport. I don't see why you would do that. But I guess they did it because everyone else was doing it.
Do you think that what we should do is, because doping is such a problem, don't you think we should just create a whole new wing of sport, like a whole new Olympics or cycling competition, in which we let them use as many
drugs
as they
like? That's been suggested before, yeah. I've heard people say that. That's not a bad idea. The doping.
Yeah.
Have the dope Olympics.
Let them innovate as much as they like.
Yeah. And then let the true competitors have their own sport where they don't do that.
Yeah, so you separate the doping and the non-doping rather than having it all mixed up. So in the doping one, because it could be quite amazing to see how fast someone could cycle.
Yeah.
Maybe they'd be able to do almost anything. They could become like the new superheroes.
Mm.
You can imagine guys with like bionic legs who can jump massive distances.
Yeah, wearing capes. They'd have to wear capes.
I think so,
And masks.
They'd have to give themselves special names.
They'd have to have superhero names.
Jump Man.
Yeah. We actually came up with superhero names.
Did you?
I was called The Blog.
I wonder why.
Yeah, they called me The Blog.
All right. Did you have special powers?
Not really. It was a concept we didn't develop.
Yeah, amazing ability to connect to the internet.
Yeah.
And what about the girls? Did they have superhero names?
They did, and I cannot remember what they are. I've probably got them written down. They were quite amusing, though.
That'll be on your blog, won't
it? It will be on there, yeah.
Okay, well, Ben, Drain Bams, a.k.a. The Blog.
The Blog.
It's been great to have you on the podcast.
It's been lovely chatting.
Do you have anything to say to the people of the world?
No, just embrace cycling. It's a great sport. Not enough people do it, especially in the UK.
Yeah.
I know it's a bit more popular here in France, but, cycling's great.
Okay. Well, on that note, ladies and gentlemen, thank you very much for listening. You should, of course, check out the website where there will be some information, including the address of Ben's blog, so you can read that and some other things. But that's it for this episode of the podcast. Thanks again, Ben, for joining me.
Thank you.
And I'll speak to you soon. Bye. Thanks again for listening to Luke's English podcast. For more information, you can visit teacherluke.wordpress.com.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.
If you enjoyed this episode of Luke's English Podcast, consider signing up for Luke's English Podcast Premium. You'll get regular premium episodes with stories, vocabulary, grammar, and pronunciation teaching from me, and the usual moments of humour and fun. Plus, with your subscription, you will be directly supporting my work and making this whole podcast project possible. For more information about Luke's English Podcast Premium, go to teacherluke.co.uk/premium info.